You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Rough Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belleville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, January 15th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. That's right, it's 1:15:15, and we're really glad you could be here with us on today's show. So much news and information to bring to you in the next 2 hours, so let's get right to it. Coming up on the show today, we have got Anthony Sincotti from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition in our regularly recurring segment, Cops Say Legalize Drugs. He's a former prison guard, and we'll get his take on why we need to end the war on drugs, not just marijuana, but all drugs. Also coming up on the show today, we'll have time for a radical rant at the end of the show. We're going to talk about linguistics a little bit. I had a friend of mine make a suggestion about some of the wording I use with respect to describing cannabis consumers. And it's a really good point, something that we'll explore in depth today in the Radical Rant. I also have a few surprises for you as far as what I consider the proper terminology to use in these circumstances. Also on the show today, we're going to go behind the headlines, and there's a chilling story coming out of Orange County, California, where a bakery was found to have baked synthetic cannabinoids into a specific type of bread that has now sickened over 40 people in the Orange County area. We'll give you a look at that. We'll discuss synthetic cannabinoids in general as well in Behind the Headlines. Also today in the Drug War Data Mines, we're going to take a look at the financial side of the data. How much money do you think has been invested in marijuana over the past 2 years? The number will surprise you. We'll break it all down and show you who the heavy hitters are in marijuana finance when we get to drug war data mining. But first, we're going to start things off with the 420 radio news. In the headlines today, Washington marijuana retailers are hiring lobbyists to make a even playing field for medical and personal marijuana use sales. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We've also got a New York State senator who's going to introduce a legalization bill in the state. We've got folks in Kansas that are rallying for a medical marijuana law in Kansas, of all places. In Vallejo, California, the city council has voted to shut down all the existing medical marijuana dispensaries. We'll show you how that vote went down. In Tennessee Normal is proposing a very interesting way of decriminalizing marijuana in Nashville, Tennessee, by defunding the cops. So we'll talk about that. Plus, Bethany Frankel, the reality TV star, she wants to get involved in the marijuana business. We'll tell you what her brand is all about. That's all coming up in the 420 Radio News right after our opening ad breaks. And then stay tuned in our second hour. We do Toker Talk Radio. We take your calls at 971-533-7111. We'll have more developments on Portland Normal to tell you about. Also, a hempcrete workshop going on this weekend that just today I was invited to take part in. I'm actually going to make my own hempcrete. It's pretty amazing. I'll bring that brick back for you on Monday's show, and we'll have interviews with all sorts of hemp luminaries, including Joy Beckerman Marr, Andrea Herman, and others who know so much about hemp. Doug Fine's going to be there as well, so we'll have plenty of people to talk to. All that's coming up on the Russ Belleville Show and Toker Talk Radio. Stay tuned for the next 2 hours. If you can't sit through the whole thing, we will have replays available on our website at 420radio.org. Stay tuned. The news is next after this 90-second break.
Marijuana Nation.
420 Radio. Tune in, turn on, get high, Lee educated.
Sir, do you think there will or should come a time for us to discuss the possibility of legalization, regulation, and control of all drugs, thereby doing away with the violent criminal market as well as a major source of funding for international terrorism? Thank you so much for your time, Mr. President.
Well, I think this is an entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Name the time and place, Mr. President. Radical Russ has been prepping for this debate full-time since 2005. The Russ Belville Show.
Connect with 420radio.org through social media, on Twitter at 420radio.org, and our Facebook page at 420radio.org. Follow us and like us today. You'll be glad you did. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today. It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Thursday, January 15th, 2015. Washington marijuana retailers are hiring lobbyists to push state legislators in Olympia to regulate medical cannabis. They want medical marijuana to meet the same safety standards as recreational pot and say customers who aren't true patients should have to buy the high-tax retail product. Some dispensaries are bringing in their own lobbyists to make sure they don't get squeezed out. Amber Lewis was hired in November by an alliance of medical and recreational businesses that want to figure out a way that's fair to both sides. Quote, "I've learned that in the cannabis industry, things are very loose until they're not," says Lewis. While the state doesn't have an exact count of medical dispensaries, they far outnumber the 334 recreational marijuana stores licensed to open. In Seattle alone, about 300 dispensaries operate, but only 21 retail licenses were issued, says Rick Garza, director of the Washington State Liquor Control Board. New York State Senator Liz Krueger will introduce a bill seeking to legalize marijuana for general use in New York State, she said on Sunday, hoping the recent passage of medical marijuana laws will help give the bill momentum. Ms. Krueger, a Democrat representing Manhattan for more than a decade, said that in the legislative session beginning in January, she will fight for a bill modeled partly on cannabis legalization laws that recently went into effect in Washington and Colorado. Ms. Krueger introduced a similar bill last session, but it was largely considered a liberal pipe dream, unlikely to pass a Republican-controlled Senate in a state that hadn't yet legalized medical marijuana. Supporters of medical marijuana in Kansas are joining two Democratic state lawmakers at a statehouse rally in favor of the Cannabis Compassionate Care Act. Representative Gail Finney of Wichita and Senator David Haley of Kansas City filed medical marijuana bills prior to the start of this year's legislative session. Similar measures have been filed since 2009, but none of them have made it to the discussion stage in committee. In addition to Thursday's rally, several medical cannabis groups also will be lobbying state lawmakers on behalf of patients and caregivers throughout the day. Finney said she thinks there's a good chance the measure will get a hearing during this year's session. The Vallejo, California City Council finally made a decision about medical marijuana dispensaries operating within the city of Vallejo. In a series of four motions, the council first decided in a 5-2 vote to shut down all dispensaries in the city, even if they are complying with the Measure C tax. In 2011, city voters approved Measure C, which imposes a business license tax of 10% on the sales of medical marijuana products within the city. According to a recent city staff report, 11 dispensaries were maintaining an active tax certificate out of the 26 known to be operating within the city. The council then unanimously approved a motion for city staff to bring recommendations back to the council on the regulation of dispensaries inside city limits. The final dispensary motion of the night to stop
stop issuing Measure C tax certificates to new applicants and stop renewing certificates to dispensaries which hold a valid tax certificate past 6-1. The Tennessee chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws plans to launch a petition signature drive to defund Nashville's enforcement of marijuana possession laws. Rather than explicitly calling for decriminalization, the proposed amendment says that the metro government shall not appropriate any resources supporting, nor in any way monetarily support, the criminal prosecution of an adult for possession of less than 2 ounces of marijuana. It also includes a private right of action provision that would give citizens standing to sue if Nashville violates this law. If an individual or organization prevails in court, the amendment reads, they would receive $1,000 in damages and payment of all costs and reasonable attorney's fees. The group would need to collect 6,877 charter amendment signatures, 10% of the August 2014 general election turnout, by May 18th in order to qualify for the August ballot. The Real Housewives of New York City reality star Bethany Frankel plans to launch her own line of skinny girl marijuana in Alaska, Colorado, Oregon, and Washington, where recreational cannabis is legal, sources reveal exclusively in the new issue of Us Weekly. Quote, it will be a specially engineered strain of pot designed to not give you the munchies, an insider close to the skinny girl cocktails creator tells Us Weekly. This has been your 420 Radio News for Thursday, January 15th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
420 Radio, the world's voice of marijuana legalization. The International Cannabis Business Conference is coming to the Hyatt Regency Hotel in San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, 2015. Don't miss this exclusive opportunity to hear from the experts on the future of marijuana commerce, including scientists like Dr. Carl Hart, Dr. Amanda Ryman, and Dr. Stanton Peel, policy experts like Ethan Nadelman from Drug Policy Alliance, Anthony Johnson from Oregon's Legalization Campaign, travel author Rick Steves from Washington's Legalization Campaign, and California legalization pioneer Dale Sky Jones. Business experts like Harborside Steve D'Angelo, ArcView Group's Troy Dayton, and UFCW union leader Dan Rush. Cannabis journalists like Ricardo Baca, Steve Bloom, and Doug Fine, and California Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, plus many, many more. Tickets are on sale now at internationalcbc.com, but hurry, last year's conference in Portland, Oregon was a sellout. International Cannabis Business Conference, San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, International CBC.
Despite strong public support for medical cannabis, decriminalization, and legalization in Georgia, the state spends $121 million every year to arrest, prosecute, and imprison Georgians for simple possession. Each year, the state of Georgia spends less on driver services, agriculture, and forestry combined. What else can $121 million a year do in Georgia? With that much money, the state could hire and keep 3,000 more teachers, improve roads and bridges, provide tax relief for small businesses, repair aging sewage systems, or lower taxes. But right now, that's millions of dollars of your tax money wasted on failed enforcement. Tell your representative you're tired of wasteful spending and ask them to end cannabis prohibition. Join the conversation at www.peachtreenormal.org. Peachtree Normal is a proud affiliate of Normal, the national organization for the reform of marijuana laws.
The Green Cross has been an amazing source of cannabis medicines for my pain management. Whether I need edibles or tinctures or topicals, I'm able to combine the two or three to give me really successful pain control.
It's the delivery service that Green Cross provides is just incredible. You get your medicine and it's delivered by a person that you know you trust.
Whether we come to you or you come to us, the Green Cross delivers.
Welcome back, everyone. 14 and a half after the hour, and today in Behind the Headlines, we take you to Orange County, California, where testing has uncovered the mystery behind over 40 people getting sick over the January 6th holiday known as Three Kings Day. In Latin American Latino communities, there is a holiday known as Three Kings Day, and it refers to the day that the three wise men showed up to celebrate the birth of Jesus, according to their legends. So there's a type of bread that is manufactured, a kind of a sweet bread that is made for the occasion, and it contains a candy on the top of it and kind of a Jesus figurine inside of it. And it's a very common thing. This is known in many Latino communities for years and years and years. But this year, there was a terrible problem in that over 40 people got very ill after consuming this bread. And it had been in the papers there in Orange County where they were trying to figure out what it might have been that harmed all these people. And now a pharmacologist who heads up S&N Laboratories, Neil Spingarn, testified that they got a sample of this bread. Not testified, he just told the newspaper. It wasn't a court case or anything, but he told the newspaper they got a sample of this Three Kings Day bread and found that it was contaminated with a substantial amount of a synthetic cannabinoid. Spingarn said, the levels in the cake are not small. What is most striking is that this was not inadvertent. So somebody, they assume at this point, and they're investigating still, deliberately put this synthetic cannabinoid into the bread mix. Now, the owners of the bakery, it's Cholula's Bakery in Santa Ana, could not be reached for comment, but they have been cooperating with investigators. The bread was delivered to 9 different stores in Orange County and 1 store in Long Beach. More than 40 people who ate it got ill. They had symptoms including heart palpitations, dizziness, numbness, hallucinations, and this was just very frightening for these people, not expecting to be tripped out by eating bread. Now, the particular cannabinoid involved here is synthetic cannabinoid known as JWH-122. That's named after John W. Huffman, who is the research chemist who designed a whole bunch of synthetic cannabis agonists to use on in vitro research to try to figure out how cannabinoids interact with brain receptors. The JWH-018, for example, is one that is often used in the synthetic pot known as Spice or K2. And the problem with the synthetic cannabinoids is that they are, shall we say, turbocharged versions of THC. THC, the naturally occurring chemical, mimics a naturally occurring molecule, I should say, mimics our own naturally occurring molecule, anandamide. And so we have these receptors in our brain that will react. That's called agonizing, right? They agonize that receptor. They'll react to that in the way that we're all familiar with. But when it comes time to do research, you can't depend on these natural cannabinoids because you've got limited amounts of time and you really need to exacerbate the symptoms that you're trying to detect. So Huffman invented these molecules, these synthetic cannabinoids, to be far, far more powerful than the THC that we're all used to. And in fact, according to statistics, 11,000 people went to emergency rooms in 2010 because of the ingestion of Spice or K2, that number jumped to 28,500 in the following year. Now, the reason why these synthetic cannabinoids have gained such popularity is because when they're first created, they're not illegal. The Federal Controlled Substances Act lists the molecular contents of everything that's illegal, right? The molecular structure of everything that's illegal. So these chemists will invent JWH-022, that molecular structure is not illegal. Eventually, the feds get around to making that illegal, so they just tweak a molecule here or there, tweak an atom here or there, tweak a bond here or there. Now they've got a whole new chemical that's not illegal. So it's been very difficult for the government and other agencies worldwide to crack down on this because when they're first invented, they're not illegal. Underground chemists in China and India are making these new synthetics faster than the DEA and the FDA can possibly ban them. Now, it's still unknown how this synthetic cannabinoid made it into this particular batch of bread and why someone would want to do that. It's definitely a criminal act, and we would remind everyone that through the legalization of natural marijuana, you remove a lot of the incentive for people to want to get involved with this synthetic crap, which is all designed mostly to get around not only the illegality of cannabis, but also drug testing. Just like these molecules aren't recognized by the feds, they're not tested for in drug testing either. So soldiers and students and all sorts of people are using spice instead.
Hey, everybody, we're all going to get laid.
That's a nice thought. All right, folks, it's 4:20. In the mountain time zone, so all our friends in Denver and Colorado Springs and Fort Collins and all Pueblo and all those great places in Colorado, light them if you got them, because it's legal. And everybody everywhere else, yeah, light them if you got them. I don't care. I ain't gonna tell. Stick around. We got Drug War Data Mining coming up next.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420radio.org.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Funky Roller Rink.
Ooh, yeah.
What's happening, Groovy Cats? This is your Funk Master of Ceremonies, Big Daddy. And I want you to join me every Thursday night at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, right here at the Funky Roller Rink.
Ooh, yeah.
Your home of soul, funk, and disco, baby.
Funky-licious.
It's always a party at the Funky Roller Rink.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz. Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. 23 after the hour in the data mines today, we take a look at the magazine Inc., INC, you know, incorporated, which follows all things financial. And in today's Drug War Data Mine, we're taking a look at how much money has been invested in marijuana in just the past couple of years, over the past two fiscal years, in fact. Investors have spent $104.5 million to gobble up stakes in cannabis and cannabis-related companies. This is according to the research firm CB Insights. And just for another shocking statistics, in 2014, the funding for the marijuana industry grew 941.5%. Wow. Folks, if you don't think that legalization is inevitable, this to me points to its inevitability. With nine figures worth of money being poked at marijuana, and it's only legal in two states so far. Hasn't officially become legal in Alaska until February 24th, not officially illegal in Oregon until July 1st. That just tells us that if two states can get $100 million in interest, what are four states going to do? What are eight states going to do? What is going to happen once California gets on board? That much money looking to be invested, looking to be made, the profits that would come from it are some of the best political capital we could hope for in the marijuana movement. Money talks, and although I know many of us are concerned about the corporatization of weed, the Walmartization of weed, hey, It wasn't legal for 40 years without the big money. If it takes the big money to get people switched over to marijuana legalization, if it takes big money investment to get the government to stop throwing our brothers and sisters in jail over this, then I'm all for it. Here are some of the big players. We all know about Privateer Holdings. Privateer Holdings, of course, is the brand behind Leafly, the Yelp of marijuana, if you want to call it that. Tilray, which is a medical marijuana farm up in Canada. And, of course, Marley Natural, the new brand of marijuana they're going to attempt to sell with the Marley family. Well, Peter Thiel, one of the first investors in Facebook, he's got a private hedge fund called Founders Fund. Well, they took part in $75 million worth of fundraising that Privateer just was able to successfully complete. And in addition to the $75 million that Privateer has raised, $20 million has been raised by PharmaCann. They're a Chicago-based group of medical marijuana cultivation centers. Leafline Labs is a Minnesota medical marijuana company. They raised $12.4 million. And Steve D'Angelo, the co-founder of the ArcView Group, which is kind of a network of angel investors for marijuana, said that ArcView has brokered a total of $17 million in deals with 34 companies since it launched in 2010. That's an average of average of $500,000, $500,000 for each company. Not bad at all. And as these companies grow in stature, they grow in profits, more and more companies are going to want to get involved. And the more Wall Street is involved in marijuana, the safer it becomes from the predators in Congress like Charles Grassley and Dianne Feinstein that want to shut it down. Money talks, folks, and it really speaks loudly when we're talking about politics. According to D'Angelo, quote, "In the beginnings of this industry, our biggest challenges were legal, but we solved many of those challenges. After we figured out the legal landscape, many of our challenges were financial to help scale up and professionalize the business. Today, investment is not really a problem. If you have a good team and a good idea, you're in a good position. There is a phenomenal amount of investment interest," end quote. And again, like I said, this is the best news I think that we could hope for in the marijuana movement. The key now is for us as marijuana consumers to band together and make sure that these companies that evolve are shaped to represent the needs of the cannabis consumers, not necessarily just their needs to make a bunch of money off of us. That is why I felt it was important to form Portland Normal, and that's why I'd encourage anyone out there who wants to help shape the marijuana industry to get involved, either join or form their own local Normal chapter. I can give you all of the information you need. I can give you all the help that you might want. I can answer questions. Just email me, portlandnormal@gmail.com. So in addition to the $100 million that's been invested in marijuana over the last 2 years, we're also seeing companies that are ancillary to the marijuana business, not directly involved with marijuana, but those that provide packaging and staffing and lighting and so many of the needs that the marijuana industry is going to require. I've met so many of these great people in Seattle with the Marijuana Business Association, met them in Florida at the Meet the Experts Conference. There'll be plenty of them at the International Cannabis Business Conference this February 15th and 16th in San Francisco. We'll be bringing you coverage from there. But folks, get ready, because we're all in this transition together, moving from activists fighting for legalization to consumers fighting for equalization. So we're going to have to learn a little bit more about the financial markets, how finances work, how IPOs and stock offerings and all of that stuff works, and maybe a little less about what the laws are as they are now starting to go our way. Let's hope that we can keep these companies in check and they represent our needs.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the TuneIn Radio app for all mobile platforms. Go to rad-r.us/420TuneIn or just click the TuneIn Radio icon below the live radio feed on 420radio.org.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane.
With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the munchies. Not cool.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalized drugs.
Welcome back, everyone. 31 after the hour, and it's time for Cops Say Legalized Drugs with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. You can find more about the organization at leap.cc on the internet. And today we're visiting with Anthony Sincotti, who's a retired corrections officer from the state of Nevada, currently living in Cape Coral, Florida. Anthony, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me back, Russ.
Oh, so glad to have you here. And it's been a while since we spoke to you. And since we last spoke to you, we saw, I would say, one of the most glaring examples of something that your bio points out, and that is the arms race that we've seen with the police agencies now having mine-resistant, ambush-protected vehicles and such. Give us your thoughts on what you saw go down in Ferguson, in Boston, other cities where maybe Americans are getting their first taste of these militarized police departments.
I think it's just another glaring problem in the bevy of them that we suffer from prohibition. I think a big portion of what causes a lot of the conflict between law enforcement and the community is we've developed a us versus them mentality on both sides. People in these communities, the only time they ever see the police is when they're there arresting somebody or rousting them or whatnot. They don't see them on a daily basis, and it goes the same way. So they don't get to know each other as people. And as long as we're incarcerating our citizens for something that at least 47% of Americans do, we're going to have a combative relationship.
Do you think that this militarization of the police, in addition to kind of putting a wedge between the police and the communities, also maybe has the unintended effect of raising crime, or at least raising the violence of the criminals involved?
I think it has the potential to, I don't know if I would say it would increase the amount of crime, but I think it would increase the severity of the violence that's attendant to crime. You're going to have the criminals are going to start arming up as well. If they feel that they're going to be shot or killed or whatnot regardless, then a lot of times they're probably going to elect to take the method of, well, I should try to shoot my way out rather than surrender. I don't know, I wasn't there in Ferguson. I don't know exactly what happened. I think that it probably should have went to a trial based on some of the transcripts that I read. But that's just kind of a side issue. The big thing is that prohibition is arming up the criminals, which is making us have to supposedly arm up our law enforcement, and it's just going to continue the cycle, just like the United States and the Soviet Union during the Cold War.
Yeah, very
well. We're going to constantly be trying to outgun each other.
Yeah, very, very good analogy there as far as the 1980s. Those of us who lived through the Cold War remember the threat of nuclear annihilation at any moment as we kept building more and more bombs. And finally, everybody just realized that everybody had to kind of disarm a little bit. What's it going to take to get our police forces disarmed in this country?
I think it's going to take a lot of steps, but I think the biggest one is going to be ending prohibition, because then we won't need as heavily armed of a police force. The criminals won't have this huge influx of cash to continue purchasing weapons, no matter how many we see. And cops will be able to direct their energy towards real crime that has real victims. You know, as terrible as drug use is, as drug abuse is, the effects of prohibition are just so much more damaging both to our society and to our citizens as individuals.
But do you think that ending drug prohibition alone can do this? I mean, now that the cops have these toys and now that the criminals have these weapons, are they going to just give them up when they turn to, I don't know, bank robbery or human trafficking or whatever other crime they might pursue?
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever completely remove ourselves of crime, and to think that that's even a possibility, I think, is a bit unrealistic. But at the end of the day, if we can cut off the funds to a business, that business is no longer able to operate at the same level as it was. Just like we break apart these giant corporations when they become a monopoly and have too much control over the market, we go and do the exact opposite with drug dealers and criminals by making them the only purveyors of a product that Americans are going to continue to buy despite 50 years of prohibition.
Hmm. So the theory there is not so much that, you know, criminals wouldn't want to give up their, I don't know, AK-47s or whatever, but they just won't be able to afford them anymore.
Exactly. And as we see them, we'll remove some from circulation, and they won't have the assets to continually replenish that arsenal. So I think that would go a long way towards reducing the amount of heavy firearms that are on the criminal marketplace.
Let's take a look at another side of this. You worked at the Lovelock Congressional Center for 13 years with the Nevada Department of Corrections. 1,600 inmates from the minimum to the maximum, all levels of criminals involved there. And how much, I mean, we're suffering from immense amounts of prison overcrowding and also the effects of privatization of prisons. How much is that profit motive for these private prisons keeping the war on drugs in place, and how will we convince them to give up that little piece of profit pie?
Well, that's definitely a big factor of it. Just look at the political contributions that these agencies give, like CCA and whatnot. They give a lot of money to politicians to keep voting the way they're voting. I think a pretty good indicator is if a business and the cartel both have the same goals, it's probably not a good goal.
Very good point. We're speaking with Anthony Sincotti. He's a retired corrections officer from Nevada, currently in Cape Coral, Florida. He's a speaker with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and you can get great speakers like Anthony to speak in your area, to your group, and you can just find out more by going to leap.cc, click on Find a Speaker. They got people everywhere, so make use of that resource the best you can. Anthony, another question I have here with regards to incarceration in America. We're now starting to see a movement. Allison Holcomb from I-502, which legalized marijuana in Washington State, has been tasked to form a panel against mass incarceration. And this term is starting to gain some political traction in Washington, D.C. as well. What would you like to see our politicians do as we move forward on ending mass incarceration?
Well, I think they should really start looking at other alternatives, particularly for the so-called victimless crimes. Anything that's prohibited is going to lead to crime. So we need to get rid of prohibition. And that's just pretty much the single biggest thing that we can do is get rid of the crime, and then we won't have criminals. Because when you make something a crime that's not really a crime, you still make real criminals. Because once they're entering into the system, we now trap them in a loop. You can't get out of jail for a drug beef and go and get a federally subsidized student loan for college. You can if you're a murderer or a rapist or a child molester. But if you're a drug dealer, you can't go get an education. So now we're locking these people into second-class citizenship. We've taken away their ability to gain legitimate, profitable employment. What do you expect a certain percentage of them are going to do? They're going to embark upon a life of even more severe crime to try to make more money. We all want to make money and survive, and we're going to do it regardless of what's put above us.
You know, that's really good to hear. And one of the aspects of this that I think people that are a little leery about this, I mean, a large portion of Americans now are on board with marijuana legalization. But when you start talking to them about other drugs, they get a little more reticent about changing the laws and ending the prohibition. And one of the arguments might be that, hey, you know, marijuana, you smoke some pot, you're going to be kind of mellow, but you know, you do some PCP, you might become wild and crazy and hurt other people. How do you respond to those fears?
Well, I tell them that I used to have the exact same fears, and I didn't overcome them overnight. It was countless hours of research and debating the subject with other people and having conversations and dialogues. If anything, I should be somebody out there going, well, yeah, let's just legalize cannabis, but let's keep drugs like heroin illegal, because I had a stepbrother die of a heroin overdose when he was 20. However, that heroin overdose quite likely could have been avoided. He had been clean for a year, and then he fell off the wagon, went to Philadelphia, got what they call a hot dose, because it's not sold in a controlled marketplace. You have no idea what you're getting. Mm-hmm. Shot up and overdosed and died on a park bench. Now, if we sold these through licensed, regulated markets, would my brother still be a junkie? Possibly. But he would also possibly still be alive to redeem his life, which is something right now that we're really denying a lot of people. And then I would like to ask them also, if you have a child and you go in their drawer and you find heroin or cocaine or something like that, are you going to call the cops and send them into the legal system? Or are you going to go and try to take them to your church to talk to your pastor, or take them to a rehab, or some other avenue? They're all going to say the same thing. Well, yeah, I'm going to try to get my kid into a rehab or something like that. And then I ask them, then why would you want to lock up somebody else?
Very, very well put. Anthony Sincotti, retired corrections officer from the state of Nevada. And as we wind up the interview today, I also wanted to discuss just a little bit about other avenues of ending these prohibition harms. Things like there's a campaign going on right now called Ban the Box that refers to the application forms for employment and getting rid of that checkbox that, yes, I've been convicted of a drug crime. I mean, is this just a stopgap measure, or until we can get the real thing, until we can get real legalization?
Yeah, and I think it's something that is definitely worthy of consideration, because even if we do get everything fixed tomorrow and prohibition goes away and we're all a more enlightened society dealing with our problems in a more realistic and effective way, we're still going to have people that have felony records. So we need to either come up with some type of way for them to say, okay, have you ever been convicted of a non-drug related felony, or something like that? Or have you ever been convicted of a violent crime? Something that's a little bit more specific than just the generic, if you've been convicted of a felony. Somebody that has a history of writing real bad checks when they were young and doing something stupid could pick up a felony beef, and now they have to report that on their job applications for the rest of their life, no matter how well they've redeemed themselves over the previous years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one final thing with respect to a civil society, I would also argue that ending prohibition then opens up drug users to be contributing members of society to call the cops when they see something's wrong, and not worrying that the cops are then going to turn their attention to them. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's like that for a number of reasons. One, drug dealers and whatnot right now don't have access to the courts, so they resolve their issues with violence. The other side, I totally derailed there. Can you repeat that?
I was just saying how as someone who has been a marijuana consumer all my, you know, adult life, there have been times where I was, you know, reluctant to want to tell police what I'd seen or report something I'd seen going on, because I was afraid next they'd be paying attention to me. So do you feel that, you know, ending the war on drugs also helps to make for a better society because more of us will want to engage with cops?
I don't know if I would go so far as to say we would be wanting to engage, but I think we would be less reluctant to do so. Again, I think it comes back to that us versus them mentality. When I was a young kid, you know, the cops were the people that you looked up to. You know, they were the members of your community that you aspired to be. Now they're the people that a large portion of our population fears more than admires. And that's really bad. I mean, they're supposed to be the backbone of our society with our law.
Yeah.
And if we can't trust the people that are enforcing our laws, or if we don't feel we can trust the people, regardless of whether we can or not, feelings are very important, and if the people feel that they can't trust these because they're always seeing them in their neighborhood, kicking away their brothers or their cousins or their sisters who are really only doing the one thing that they frequently get busted for, which is drugs.
Yeah. Well, Anthony,
it's a problem, it's a health problem, but it shouldn't be a law enforcement problem.
Agreed. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us again, and good luck on all your future speaking engagements.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Thanks for having me, and look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
All right, folks. Anthony Sincotti from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Stay tuned. We're back with the anti-drug public service announcement of the day, and then a radical rant on linguistics here in the marijuana movement. Stick around.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the Ustream video app for Android and iPhone. Go to rad-r.us/420Ustream or just click the Ustream app icon for Android or iPhone below the live radio feed at 420radio.org.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
This is the brain activity of a normal 14-year-old. This is the brain activity of a 14-year-old after smoking marijuana. If you use pot, you're not using your brain.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 48 after the hour, and today's rant is inspired by our good friend Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, who sent me an email today that said, "Dude," because all his emails start with "dude." "Dude, I really, really, really wish you would stop referring to healthy marijuana smokers." And he put "healthy" in quotes. And the complaint was this tendency I have to demarcate, you know, the sick and disabled marijuana consumer versus the healthy marijuana consumer. And he made the point that for people that are sick or disabled, it kind of is a dig at them when you compare them to someone who's healthy. I don't really see it, but then again, I'm not disabled or sick, so I don't know, but maybe that's true. Maybe there is a better terminology that I could come up with rather than saying a healthy marijuana consumer. Because really, I mean, who among us is healthy? What is healthy, right? I would be one of those ones that I'd call a healthy marijuana consumer, but I suffer from depression and insomnia, and I got a nasty toenail fungus. I mean, is that healthy? Well, I think so. I think people, when they refer to a healthy marijuana consumer, they mean it in comparison to someone for whom the lack of marijuana would be severely detrimental, right? If I don't have any marijuana, like I haven't the past couple of days, it's tougher to get to sleep. I might get depressed here and there, but it's not the end of the world, right? I can usually cope. But maybe we don't need to make that distinction. Maybe we don't need to use the word healthy in that respect. You know, I often think that referring to healthy marijuana consumers, maybe I've been doing that because I recoil from the term recreational user. I've never liked the name recreational pot smoker. You're a recreational marijuana user. What am I, loading up in an RV or something? You're heading to Yosemite? What? Recreational, right? I mean, recreational to me means playtime, means indulgence, means leisure. And while marijuana use can be those things, I believe it puts it in this place where it's a second-class use, right? If someone's just using it for pleasure, well, then they can be self-disciplined and forego that pleasure. They can delay gratification. That's where we start getting into this thinking of, well, that kid who got popped for the Oregon Ducks, why, he just shouldn't have smoked pot. He knew what the rules were. And to me, it's not a question of why we're using it. It's not a question of whether I wanted to use it to get to sleep, to enjoy a comedy, to enhance a meal, to enhance sex. It doesn't matter why I'm using it, or for that matter, to end the tremors of multiple sclerosis or kill the pain of cancer. All use is none ya. It's none ya business. It's a civil right we're talking about here. The right to do with our body what we choose. The marijuana is ancillary. The marijuana isn't the subject of the civil right. The subject of the civil right is our bodies and our brains and our right to do with them what we choose. So for me, when you say recreational marijuana use, you're demeaning a civil right. You're making it lesser. You're making it less than what it is. So I would like to get rid of the word healthy marijuana consumer, get rid of the word recreational marijuana consumer, and perhaps we should just start referring to all of it as personal marijuana use. Now, there are some significant differences between medical uses of marijuana and personal uses of marijuana. That's not to be denied, but I believe we should only make that demarcation when it's absolutely necessary. One of Sun Tzu's main tenets in the art of war is divide and conquer. Divide your enemy and they're easier to defeat. And originally we made that division between medical and personal use in order to get a wedge, in order to get through something, get something legalized. But now as legalization is taking hold and a majority of the American people support legalization, I believe unnecessarily demarking the difference between medical and personal use weakens our case. It's all personal use. We all have the personal right to use this marijuana. Now, words do matter. I agree that words matter, and I'm all about framing. I mean, one of the things that I've been trying diligently to do in my speech is to get rid of the word user and replace it with consumer. And part of the reason why is the framing of user brings up heroin and cocaine and all these other drugs. But user also is someone who is actively taking something. Someone who's a user is someone who's a parasite, someone who's taking. But someone who is a consumer is someone who is giving. A consumer is buying something. A consumer is contributing to the economy. And I think that does us much better in the minds of people by calling ourselves marijuana consumers than calling ourselves marijuana users. And for example, when it comes to this framing, though, I do have to warn about going too far. I watched there was something that was playing on 420 radio the other day, and it was a feature that involved Al Byrne from Patience Out of Time. And I love Al Byrne from Patience Out of Time, but he is much more strident on this language issue than I am. Al Byrne believes we should never call it marijuana. The word marijuana ought to be stricken. It should only be cannabis. Only cannabis. And while I have made the point that words matter and framing matters, and there is an argument to be made that cannabis lacks the frame that marijuana has. Marijuana kind of has the frame of being political, you know, Vietnam War, liberal, all of those things that are attached, summer of love, all of this baggage that's attached to marijuana, Cheech and Chong. I understand that argument, and I don't necessarily deny all of that argument. However, replacing marijuana with cannabis is replacing a known with an unknown in the minds of a lot of people. And that unknown, that cannabis frame, is something that we're shaping, and I think there can be a problem with that, in that it starts to appear like what I call fig leafing. Fig leafing is when you take something you're ashamed of and you dress it up in pretty $15 words to be not ashamed of it. It's like when Garbage Man went to refuse collector, right? Come on, we all know what a garbage man is, and there's nothing sinful or shameful about being a garbage man. You know, it's like when blind became visually impaired, which is that's not even proper, because someone who's blind isn't visually impaired. They lack vision. There's no impairment. It's just not there, right? So sometimes I think this political correctness, this fig leafing, goes a little too far. And I think with marijuana, that can be the case. Now, I think it also depends on how erudite and informed you are on your opinions about marijuana and how you look and present yourself when you speak about marijuana. When I've got the suit and the tie on and the short hair and I'm lecturing at a lectern and I'm discussing marijuana, I don't think a lot of people are framing up Cheech and Chong in their minds. And I also think that marijuana is actually an accurate word. I think it's a more accurate word than cannabis. Cannabis is a species of plant. That includes its root ball, its stalks, its seeds, its leaves, its flowers. But marijuana is very specifically the flowering tops of cannabis that are dried for smoking purposes. And that's why I like the term marijuana. I don't smoke cannabis. You take root and stem and leaf and bud and seed and grind it all up and put it in a joint. I ain't smoking that. That's cannabis. But you take some marijuana and grind it up and roll it in a joint. I'm going to smoke that. So there is framing to be understood, but I don't think marijuana is one that we need to recoil from here in America. Now, maybe Canada, Australia, the United Kingdom, they already have a frame for cannabis. So there, I think it makes more sense to say cannabis. But here in America, I think marijuana is here to stay. And I think, and I know, when you look up on Google or any search engine, you get 10 times the hits for marijuana than you do for cannabis. And most of the hits you get for cannabis are outside the United States. So I worry about being strident on never saying marijuana, because I think to some people that appears as fig leafing, as, well, gee, what are you ashamed of? Well, what are you trying to hide? So I do encourage people to be careful about that. Other ideas like dispensaries or pot shops. Why not just marijuana store for all of them? Why do we have to designate the difference between why the person's going into the building? They're purchasing the same product. It's marijuana. I can walk into a dispensary and buy White Fire OG. I can walk into a pot shop and buy White Fire OG. So why make that difference? I say only make the distinctions between the medical uses and the personal uses where necessary. If we're talking about something like, I don't know, providing CBD onlys or higher plant limits or tax rebates, then there's an important difference between medical and personal use. But in any other, I'd say the default should be to think of us as all one. We're all one set of consumers, and we're all consuming one plant. United will stand, divided will fall. Thanks, everybody. That's all the time we got for Hour 1. Stay tuned for Hour 2. Toker Talk Radio is coming up next. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. For everyone here at 420radio.org, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You're taking seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it.